This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Mark Haney. Kentucky's new governor, Matt Bevin, has been shaking things up since taking office. He's trying to change Medicaid. He's abolished and reorganized the Workers' Compensation Nominating Commission and has overhauled the University of Louisville's Board of Trustees, to name a few. Attorney General Andy Beshear is trying to sue the governor for his actions. Joining me to talk about Matt Bevin's first 7 months in office are Northern Kentucky Tribune Washington correspondent Bill Straub and Kentucky Public Radio Capital Bureau Chief Ryland Barton. We are unable to take any calls right now, but we would love to have your questions and comments via email. That's talk@wvxu.org, or you can post your questions on Facebook or Twitter. Good afternoon, Bill and Ryland.
Hey there.
Marianne, how are you?
Good. Glad to have you both here. I thought it'd be a good place to start to just give us your general impressions, first of all, on the governor's first 7 months in office. And Bill, we'll start with you.
Well, it's a lot of territory to cover. It's especially since the end of the legislative session, he's been particularly busy revamping boards and trying to close abortion clinics. And of course, trying to gain some leverage with the federal government as far as the Medicaid expansion is concerned. And also while doing all this, carrying on an ongoing feud with his predecessor, former Governor Steve Beshear. It's been one thing after another. One thing you could say about his first 7 months in office is that it has not been boring. And my guess is that it's probably going to continue at this level for some months to come.
Ryland, why don't you, as a person in Frankfurt every day, covering the governor almost on a daily basis, what have you observed?
Well, just to add on that, I think one of the biggest takeaways is just with the speed with which Governor Bevin has really been trying to fulfill a lot of his campaign promises to, you know, be an outsider and clean up Frankfurt. After the legislative session, we've seen him really trying to solidify and exercise the governor's power in a much more just bring a lot more power into the governor's office than have been expressed by previous governors, especially with a lot of these board reorganizations. Although these board reorganizations aren't unprecedented, they are. I think that the ways in which he has done it has certainly been very high profile, and also just again with the speed with which they've happened, and then certainly, you know, following through on his promise to transform the state's Medicaid system and also the state health exchange. And, you know, it was within the first 6 months of him in office that he's making moves on all of these things.
Let's sort of break it down.
Go ahead, Bill.
Go right ahead.
That's good. I was just going to say, in years past, for instance, governors have done away with boards. Kentucky State University and Morehead State University back years ago were having problems, and the governor at the time redid the boards. But what they did at that time was they asked the members of the boards of trustees to resign, and most of them, if not all of them, did. You know, there were certain processes in place in order to do that. He's taken it upon himself just to willy-nilly do away with them. And one of them, of course, was the board that oversees the Kentucky Horse Park. And it just to show that there is some political calculation on the governor's part in all this, one of the people he replaced was Jane Beshear, who is the, of course, married to the former governor, with whom, as I said earlier, the governor is feuding. So, and also, there was another incident that bears repeating, although it's a little bit off the subject. Representative Sinnott in Ashland, apparently the governor tried to get him to come over to his side, changed from a Democrat to a Republican recently. And when the representative refused to do that, he claims he was threatened by the governor. So this, he was just saying, this is all rolled into getting the ball rolling on everything.
As we talk about all of the boards, the University of Louisville board, as you mentioned, he did not ask him to resign. He just kicked them all off, basically. Is that correct? Ryland?
Yeah, well, I guess as the governor would describe it, he abolished the board, and thereby the trustees were no longer on the board. That's kind of part of the argument, is that, you know, he didn't fire them. The board was abolished. So, that's basically what happened. The board was abolished. Then he went and he's now appointed. He's created a new board. It's a smaller board. It's the number of appointees has been reduced from 17 to 10, and he's now appointed all 10 new members. And part of what the governor's problem with the previous board was that the political makeup of the board was out of whack. There were too many Democrats on the board. There are supposed to be, the political affiliations are supposed to be, the ratio of people on the board is supposed to match the state's ratio of political party makeup. So that's been brought into line by the governor's appointments, and also in terms of the racial makeup as well. That was another problem that the governor saw in that board, and he's replaced that. But the way in which he did it is what's being called into question, whether a governor is allowed to simply disband a board like that. And the people who are challenging the governor's move on this say that, state law says that, you have to have good cause to remove these board members. Many of the former trustees, at least, maintained that there was no good reason for them to just, be removed like that.
Now, correct
me if I'm wrong, but isn't it in statute how the number of individuals that are supposed to serve on the University of Louisville Board of Trustees?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Go ahead, Bill.
I'm sorry, go ahead. And so he's basically reduced it and claimed power to do so reducing it from 17 to 10. So if the legislature comes back next year and keeps it at 17, he could just do the same. In other words, he believes he could just do the same thing again.
One of the people that is challenging him on many of the things that he has done is the Attorney General Andy Beshear, who happens to be the son of former Governor Steve Beshear. Can you explain, maybe Ryland Start and Bill follow up, with what the Attorney General is challenging and where those court cases stand?
Well, the first lawsuit was Governor Bevin went and made 2% reductions to the amount of money that state colleges and universities get from the state. And that's in the current budget, the budget that the legislature passed 2 years ago. He decided to make a 2% reduction, and really this was without the legislature voting on it or anything. And so the Attorney General says that the governor doesn't have the authority to do that unless the state is facing a financial shortfall, which the state is not at the moment. And so that's the first one, that kind of then kind of keeping up the banter. Andy Beshear's challenges of the governor's board reorganization started happening later, and at this point the governor has reorganized several boards, but the ones that the Attorney General is challenging is the Kentucky Retirement Systems, which manages the state pension fund for many state workers and is woefully underfunded. Governor Bevin removed the chair of that board of trustees, and then also reorganized the board, adding new members, adding four new members, and then appointing those four new members. And then, like we were talking about, the University of Louisville Board of Trustees. Andy Beshear hasn't been, he's filed a motion to intervene on that Kentucky Retirement Systems lawsuit, hasn't been granted yet, but that University of Louisville Board of Trustees challenge is a separate lawsuit.
Bill?
Yeah, most of the action is coming in board. And I think there was another one, correct me if I'm wrong, about the nominating committee for the workers' comp board, which has also drawn a lot of attention. Right. And some of this, I guess, is going to be handled by Franklin Circuit Judge Phil Shepard. And at least in one initial ruling, he's cast some doubt about the extent of the governor's power to do all this. So that's more that's going to be coming down the line. Interestingly enough, the legislature has been kind of quiet about all this. I mean, there's no love lost between the House and the governor. The House is still controlled by Democrats, but they're basically letting it all be settled in the courts, it seems, instead of making any sort of political hay over it.
How much of this is a feud between the Beshears and Matt Bevin?
Go ahead, Bill.
I was just going to say some of it. Certainly, there probably is some of it on the Kentucky Horse Park Board where he dumped her. But there's obviously a lot on the Medicaid issue too. The governor was on a Louisville radio show. I don't know, last week or the week before, where he called his predecessor, the former governor, an embarrassment, and then said that the only reason that Andy Beshear is taking these legal actions against him is because of his genes, basically, because he was the former governor's son. So it's certainly. I don't know if there's any straightforward action that the governor has taken because of this feud, but he's not making any. He's not trying to keep it quiet either.
Ryland?
Yeah, certainly. See, a lot of it is framed in terms of this feud, and it's not a totally fair assessment, but it definitely exists. I mean, especially with the governor's push to overhaul the Medicaid system, the Medicaid expansion, and the State Health Exchange Connect. Those were big successes in the mind of former Governor Steve Beshear, and you can certainly see him kind of coming out of his so-called retirement to try and defend his legacy, essentially. And a lot of the rhetoric ends up getting a bit nasty between the two governors involved in this. But then you also see this incredible sensitivity to the story being framed in that way. I mean, every one of these press conferences that Attorney General Andy Beshear has, he has the same line that he repeats: "This is not about Beshear versus Bevin." He says it every time, and I think that's partly fair. But you have to recognize that this relationship of having a Democratic Attorney General with a Republican governor in office is just—it's made for political challenges. I think we saw that a bit, in a previous instance in which there was a Republican governor and a Democratic Attorney General, with Ernie Fletcher, Governor Ernie Fletcher, and then at the time Attorney General Greg Stumbo. Stumbo challenged Fletcher on several cases, and really it ended up kind of some of those issues winded up being the playing into the downfall of Governor Fletcher, at least preventing him, making him seem like a candidate who shouldn't be reelected.
Do you think that's likely to happen again in this case? Is it a situation where Andy Beshear's actions will have a long-term effect on Matt Bevin, or is it just too early to say?
I guess we'll have to see how these lawsuits play out. I mean, I think that's a big question, how politically risky are these lawsuits? And I think that there's an argument to be made that they're really not that politically risky. What's the governor got to lose by, trying to do a certain thing, and say he gets challenged and loses a couple of these things? I mean, in the end, are voters going to like vote against the governor because of something like this? I think that's a question that we will, that will be answered by the polls. In the end, I think that the real thing that will guide voters is how the governor uses this power. Does he? And if these are newfound powers that he finds in these lawsuits, how does he use them? Does he use them to kind of continue this so-called mandate to clean up Frankfurt? And does he do it in an effective way, or does he end up, ruffling feathers and do some of these things end up not working or backfiring? Again, these are the questions that will be answered on down the road.
Bill?
I'd say you have to remember he's got another approximately 3.5 more years to go in this term. And if he keeps it up at this pace, there's always the possibility that people are going to get worn out with it. If he keeps on dumping boards and trying to close abortion clinics and trying to do this, that, and the other, the whole thing just might pile up on him. Now, the difference, there's a small difference between what's going on here and what happened with Governor Fletcher. You got to remember that Governor Fletcher was the first Republican to serve as governor since Louis Nunn left office in 1971. The electorate now is, even though Fletcher's tenure was relatively soon, the electorate's really a lot different. And I think the fact that the Governor Bevin was elected with the turnout, to correct me if I'm wrong, was about 31% or something like that. And people just are not don't seem to be that interested in what's going on in Frankfort. So he could probably do a lot of things and not draw a whole lot of watching from folks. And if that's the case, then he'll survive. But if he goes overboard, then there might just be an anti-Bevin vote coming up.
Now, Ryland, you mentioned the idea or the fact that the House is still Democratic while the Senate is Republican in Kentucky. What do you think this means for future General Assembly sessions coming up with Governor Bevin?
Well, I think that some of these issues are playing out right now in House elections. All 100 seats in the House are up for re-election this year, although I think it's something like 63 of those seats have contested races. And I think that you will see this year, although the campaign season hasn't really heated up all too much, at least across the board on these House races, that the candidates will be campaigning, you know, say, Democrats against the governor and say, you know, cuts to higher education, these current year cuts to higher education, and also cuts to budgets. Cuts to, you know, this next 2-year budget, and vice versa. You know, Republicans will be riding this wave of increased Republican voter registration, and also celebrating this this Republican governor who's, you know, putting more money into the pension systems and fulfilling these promises to clean up Frankfort. Again, yeah, that Democratic House majority, that slim majority, is on the line. All eyes are on that this November, and we'll kind of see how the governor plays into that. But I think right now it's Democrats have 53 members and Republicans have 47 in the House. So there's a narrow margin there that Republicans are hoping to take.
Bill?
You have to remember, it's sort of interesting. Because there was a lot of speculation that the Republicans were going to take over the House earlier this year, because a couple of appointments by the governor removed some Democrats, and there were several special elections, and I think most observers thought that the Republicans were likely to get most of those seats, and then that would give them the majority or 50 or a 50-50 split or something like that. But the Democrats, surprisingly, took most of those special elections. And one particularly over in Georgetown, nobody had any idea that the Democrats were going to prevail in that race. So it's worth noting that I believe the Kentucky House of Representatives is the last legislative body in what is considered the South to be controlled by Democrats. Every other legislative body, including the Kentucky Senate, is ruled by Republicans. So there's an idea that Republicans might prevail actually in this general election. But if you look back at the past special election, it's still up in the air. And there's still some pretty good politicians on the Democratic side. Greg Stembo, who, as Ryland said earlier, was a former attorney general, is back, and he's the speaker there, so he may have some tricks up his sleeve, too. It'll all come down to November and to see who winds up winning the Kentucky House. And if it's the Democrats, it's probably going to cause particular problems with the governor.
I want to remind you that if you want to ask a question, while we can't take your phone calls today, feel free to email a question to talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, and you can post your questions there if you have any today, as we're talking about the Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin in his first 7 months in office, with Northern Kentucky Tribune Washington correspondent Bill Straub and Kentucky Public Radio Capitol Bureau Chief Rylan Barton. You were both talking about the election. Bill, why don't you sort of put this in play in terms of the presidential election, and depending on who gets elected, if it's Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, will that have an effect on what happens, do you think, farther down the ticket in Kentucky?
Well, usually it's all according to what the turnout is and how it gets split. I think most folks freely admit, and if you look at all the analysis going on, that Donald Trump is going to carry Kentucky. But in the past, there's been a lot of ticket splitting. The Republicans have on a presidential, and then, for instance, on the U.S. Senate level, have done pretty good in Kentucky over the past 30 years or so. That has not done anything to stop the House from remaining in the hands of Democrats, although the margin has slackened considerably since the high cotton days for the Democrats in this state. It's all across, state legislative races are a little different than other races, because a lot of people in state legislative races know the guy who's running, the guy or the woman who is running for that seat. There's like a personal connection to them, as opposed to, say, whether they're going to vote for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. And if Democrats could take advantage of that, then ticket splitting might not have that great a effect.
Ryland?
Yeah, I think that one thing that we've been seeing a bit as the House races start heating up, as the state races start heating up, is that Republicans in the state are really campaigning against Hillary Clinton in a lot of their materials. And Hillary didn't do as well as people may have thought she would have done earlier on in the election cycle during this primary. I think that there was some hope that she would perform as well as she did during the presidential election, during the presidential primary in 2008, when she did much better than now President Obama in that race. And she narrowly beat out Senator Sanders in this. And I think that, again, it's another one of these. We'll wait and see how much that effect of her not having as much support kind of trickles down. Whether Kentucky Democrats will continue that tradition of splitting tickets, because that's something that's been kind of unique here. That Democrats will vote or Kentuckians will vote Democratic on statewide issues or on local House races or on say the governor or the various constitutional candidates, and then they'll end up voting Republican on those federal elections for president, for congressman, and for senators. And the trend, as we've been seeing, is that there's an increase in Republican registration in Kentucky, and certainly an increase in the number of Republicans getting elected.
We're out of time. I hate to interrupt you, but Rylan, Bill, thank you both so much. The governor's only been office 7 months. I'm sure we'll want to talk about him again. We hope you both come back.
Great. Thank you. Anytime.
Thank you so much. We've been talking about Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin's first 7 months in office. My guests today were Northern Kentucky Tribune Washington correspondent Bill Straub and Kentucky Public Radio Capitol Bureau Chief Rylan Barton. Producer for today's program is Pete Reitmeier. Assistant producer Belinda Kai. Today's technical director was Dave Shermer. We also had help today from Jim Nolan. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney.